got the drive to create things. You're a writer, a photographer, a musician, a maker. You're ready to make things happen.
But chasing creative isn't always easy. Your time and energy go to your work, your family, and your life. Is it really possible to make space for the creative in your everyday?
Here at the Chasing Creative Podcast, we believe you can. We're everyday creatives who have insights and action steps you can take today to make your creative plans happen.
I'm Ashley Brooks, a freelance writer and editor at Brooks Editorial and a work-at-home mom of three. I spend my creative time working on a novel and occasionally doing some knitting.
And I'm Abigail Krebs, the writer and photographer behind Inkwells and Images. I'm also a work-at-home mom of one, learning to balance work and home and trying to find a little bit of time to work on something just for fun.
And you're listening to the Chasing Creative Podcast.
We are so excited to welcome one of our first and favorite guests back to the show today. We've got Kendra Adachi from the Lazy Genius Podcast. Hi, Kendra.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me.
We are so excited you're here. So for anyone not familiar with her, Kendra is here to help you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't. And we can all use some help with that in our creative lives. So she is the creator and host of the Lazy Genius Podcast, a short weekly show that helps you feel less overwhelmed in your home, your schedule, and your soul. She calls herself a professional permission giver, and there are a lot of places women need permission to embrace and let go. You can find Kendra mostly on Instagram at The Lazy Genius or in your inbox for her monthly latest lazy letter. She lives in North Carolina with her husband, three kids, and zero pets despite her children's protests, which we applaud heartily. So Kendra is a lazy genius about all things, including arranging your life in a way that allows you time and energy to pursue creative projects. And we really cannot wait to share her insights with you today. So welcome back to the show, Kendra.
I'm so happy to be here. You guys, I think y'all might have been my first podcast interview ever, or at least in like the first two or three. Yes.
Oh, that's so surprising. Cause I feel like you're one of the like original podcasters. You've been podcasting for a very long time.
It feels like it's been a long time. And then also I'm like 3 months ago. Like, it's so funny how things feel like that. It's like kids. It's like, I just had a kid who now is 10. Like, it's so weird. It's a weird thing.
Yes, time does fly by like that. So you are the Lazy Genius. So can you explain for anybody who might not be familiar with you, which they're going to love you and very quickly become familiar with you, but can you explain to people what it means to be a lazy genius?
I sure can. I think that what is so interesting to me about being a woman, most of the time, most of my listeners are women, not all. There's like a handful of dudes. But I think that there's obvious pressure on women to be, you know, all things to all people and to care about everything and to do everything really well. And I think what we tend to do is either try really, really hard at everything and are consequently super tired, because no one can be great. Nobody can be a genius at everything. And then the other response, though, is when we just get sort of burnt out on that way of living. We're like, screw it. I'm not going to do anything. I don't care. You know, like, we sort of lean into, not that messy hair don't care is a bad thing, but we kind of lean into that of just like, I give up. I'm out.
Yeah, burn it all down.
Burn it all down. It's like we're burning down or we burn everything else down. And so I feel like that being a lazy genius is just, it is permission to care about things that matter to you. Like, you are allowed to care about things. You're allowed to be good at things. You're allowed to put effort into things. You're allowed to care, but you're also allowed to let other things go. And so being a lazy genius is not about being all genius or all lazy. It's about being a genius about the things that matter and then lazy about the things that don't.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Like, this is why Abby and I have loved you for so long, because it's like speaking right to our hearts with that message about not having to do all the things and be all the things for everybody, which there is so much pressure on us to be. So you have been making things and sharing them for a really long time, including running your blog, two different podcasts. You've written about food and cooking. Your recipe for Change Your Life Chicken is on regular rotation at our house. And we're going to link to that in the show notes because people need to have that in their lives. You even once upon a time had an amazing creative project called The Sugar Box. And so how have you known when it's time to move on from a creative project versus when it's time to take a break and come back later or pivot and do the same project just a little bit differently?
Is it just me, or when you hear someone talk about pivot, you hear Ross holding a couch? I mean, it's just, you can't not say it. No, it's funny hearing you like say all those things. I'm like, gosh, that's like a lot of different kinds of things that I have, that I've done. But at the same time, it feels like I've sort of been doing in a lot of ways, one thing. Now, so here's what I would say to that. For one thing, I am a gut person. Like, I just really depend on my intuition to make decisions. I definitely like love listening to other people's feedback and that kind of thing. But if something doesn't feel right, I'm not going to do it. Like, I just don't know how to function otherwise. So if something doesn't feel right, I don't do it. And so a lot of my pivots and sort of, I guess like progression in my work has just been, this isn't feeling right anymore. Why? You know, like, and then just sort of just taking the time to name that. But the funny thing too, is that I am a recovering perfectionist. I don't like to call myself a perfectionist because I really have embraced a lot of, letting that go because it doesn't get me anywhere, but just being tired. So I am a recovering perfectionist, but that often gets in the way of trusting my gut. And so it's funny. I was having a conversation with some friends. I have a group that meets together about once a month, and we're all in different creative kind of professions and even hobbies, and just talk about creativity together, like around a table once a month, and it's a delight. But we were sharing about kind of starting new projects and finishing what you start, basically. And I said out loud, I don't feel like I'm a good shipper. I don't feel like I'm a good, like, come up with an idea and then just put it out there. And literally everyone in the room laughed in my face, like guffawed at me. And they're like, I'm sorry, what did you just say? And I was like, I was so confused by their reaction. I was like, I don't feel like I'm a good shipper. And they started to name these things like The Sugar Box, like starting the blog, starting the podcast, just sort of different. I've been writing a book these past few months and just naming some of these things. And I didn't realize how many things I had started and continued. And I think it's because I am such a perfectionist and hold myself to such a high standard in my own head that there are so many ideas that I do have that I just don't, like, if an idea doesn't finish, like if it doesn't come out and have legs and like lots of moving parts and move, it doesn't count. That's what I think I have seen in my own life, my own creative life. And that is just such a fallacy that I think that we all sort of need to get into more of a, be surrounded by people who think differently than we do in terms of like trusting your gut or trusting conversation or trusting information or I don't really know, but like being in this group of people and hearing them say to me, like, speak back to me the truth. That, like, not only have you shipped things, but also, like, the fact that you think that an idea isn't worthwhile unless it is, like, fully formed and successful is not healthy creativity, Kendra. Like, that's not a good place. That's not a good headspace for you to be. And so coming back around to just, like, knowing when it's time to move on and when to pivot, I think that I am still in the process of learning what that means, of learning what it means to trust when something doesn't feel right and, or when it does, and believing that I can keep moving and that even if it doesn't come to like full completion, that doesn't mean that it was a failure. If it's not perfect, that doesn't mean it's a failure. That, you know, it's just, there are a lot of, hangups that we have around that kind of thing. And I'm just learning that trying and changing without knowing what's going to come next is not just okay, but it's also like a really, really vital part of the creative process itself.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point that we don't necessarily need to have like this checklist for how we know when it's time to move on to something or do things different or whatever. But sometimes just surrounding yourself with that community and learning as you go can be a much healthier way of approaching it. Like as you were talking about that community, I was like, oh, I think I kind of do that too, but I didn't even realize it. Like, I'm an external processor, even though I'm an introvert. So sometimes if I'm trying to figure out what to do, I'll be like writing about it and journaling about it and trying to figure things out in my head. And it's not until I sit down and talk with another person and they're like, well, it sounds like you need to do this. I'm like, well, you're right. That does sound accurate, doesn't it? Thank you for simplifying this thing I've been agonizing over for like 6 months.
It's like, it feels like such a waste, right? You're like, oh, thank you for saying that in two sentences. Yep. Like, then I have been like, yeah, writing so many words down, like outside of a foggy window, like trying to find the meaning. Yep. And someone just says it. So great.
That is interesting to me, because I am a total head processor. I do not listen to my body in those instances, even when my gut might be talking to me and telling me like, this has an icky feeling and you need to maybe evaluate that. I'm like, no, things are fine. I can do this. No big deal. So that is a really good reminder for people like me who live in our heads like 100% of the time, that maybe that listening to your body and listening to how you are responding to whatever season you're in and whatever project you're working on, if there's those kinds of changes brewing and your body feels it before you actually do, your head does, that maybe you should listen to it a little bit more.
And you know, on the other side of that too, I think that sometimes my body tells me things that are rooted in more than just the idea or the project. You know, like it might say, this doesn't feel right, but it's because I'm afraid of something deeper than the project itself. Mm. And so it's not the project, you know, it's not the project that doesn't feel right. It's like a lot of things that are lying dormant underneath it that the project just happens to be like opening the door to. And so I think that that is such a good distinction, that it's not that just like your intuition is always right. I think your intuition is always has always helpful information. I think that what comes out of your head, like it's I forget who said this, but Emily P. Freeman says that someone else that she talked to says, so I don't want to give it credit to the person, but I don't know the name, that everything is information. Like it's all just information. And so you don't have to put morality on it. You don't have to put terrible meaning behind it as you're just gathering information. Like you can listen to your body and go, huh, okay, my body's telling me this. And it's leading me down this path. But at the same time, I haven't processed these specific feelings of rejection that happened the last time I did a project like that. So maybe that's what my body's reacting to, not the project. So it's kind of like, yeah, collecting information and being sort of an explorer of yourself. But that takes time. You know, that takes space that I don't think we usually give ourselves, which is why having like shows like yours, you guys being partners in this kind of thing, and like this group that I meet with, like having other people where you have designated space to sort of process out stuff like that is so helpful. Because I think a lot of times otherwise we just don't give ourselves a chance to find it.
Yes. And I really like what you said about how it's not always the project. Sometimes there's other stuff surrounding the project or the circumstances of the project or this other stuff that we could be reacting to. And it kind of reminds me of something that you said in our first podcast interview, which was way back in 2016, and we will link to in the show notes because it's worth listening to again. But you said that you never wanted to resent your kids because you had work to do, which I think is a great example of the project itself might be okay, but if you've also got little people at home who need you and that's in conflict with each other, that might be something that you need to reconsider. And that actually completely changed the way I parent. At that time, I only had one kid. Now I have three. And at that time, I was pregnant with my second. And I was starting to become resentful of the one child I had at that point because I was like, well, I've got all this work to do and this kid's here in my way now. And you telling me that was like a big mindset shift for me. And so I think back to that all the time, and I think it's worth revisiting. But now I'm curious to hear, now you have three kids. Back at that interview, you were pregnant also, I think. And so I'm curious to hear how you find the balance between being there for your people who need you and also needing to put a stake in the ground and saying, hey, I have this creative project I'm working on and it's really important to me and I need to take time and space for myself to work on it. So do you have any tips that you could share around that?
I hope so. Because you're right. It's like, it's such a personal thing. Every parent, every family functions differently. Everybody's job is different. And so I think that an important thing for your listeners, it's easy to look for an answer. And I'm not sure that there really are any, because it really is, it is such a personal thing. But what I hope that we can all look for is just permission to do what makes sense for us. And so one of the things that has really helped me in just sort of giving myself permission in, especially as I have begun to work more than I did back in 2016, you know, I'm spending a lot more hours working. I have a lot more projects, Lazy Genius projects going, and it's a job. Like, it's a full-time job. It's not full-time hours, but it's full-time work. Mm-hmm. And so it can be really tricky to kind of like, yeah, have that parenting project dance. And a couple of things that have really helped me in that is I have really enjoyed seeing my kids watch me work, watch me go to work, for them to value mom's going to work. Mom is, you know, doing something that she really loves. And they think it's so funny. They think I know every famous person. First, they think I'm famous, which is hysterical.
You kind of are.
But then they think, no, like, we were watching, you guys. Okay, so we have, as a family show that we watched together, which I'm now like sort of on board, but very reluctantly joined, was The Masked Singer. Have you guys watched this
all? I've seen a couple episodes, yes.
Okay, yeah, so we watched The Masked Singer. The irony of it is that my kids know none of the celebrities under the masks. They don't know who anyone is. But when the reveal happens, they're like, oh my gosh, I knew that was Antonio Brown. I'm like, you've never seen Antonio Brown in your life. Like, you have no idea what you're talking about. It's so funny to me. But my point in that is, as we watch The Masked Singer, like, the mask will come off and they'll be like, Mom, do you know her? Do you know him? I'm like, no, I don't know Jenny McCarthy. Like, I don't. But thank you for that. But what is so sweet is that they, it's not that like my being known by people on the internet is anything that's like grander than if I were working, you know, as a nurse or as a secretary or as a teacher or a doctor, any of those things. That's just the work that they know that I do. You know, like, that's their dad is a school counselor and their mom talks on her phone. Like, that's what they know. And so, but I think that by my valuing the work, by them seeing me leave and come back rather than my doing it in the cracks, which is what I used to do, like when they were asleep and they didn't even really know that I had a job or that I was doing work, has really given them this really sweet sense of like, oh, mom's work. It's kind of normalized that I'm working. It has made it so that they're like excited when I'm excited about certain things. Like when I signed my first book contract, they don't really understand what that means. And I don't expect them to, but like we all went out for dinner because mommy had something really fun happen at work and we're all going to celebrate it together. And so I think that's something like, just for the, as the nature of my family has changed because my kids are older. I mean, my boys are both in elementary school, so they're, you know, in school all day. And then my daughter is in preschool 3 mornings a week. And then she is, I have somebody watch her another morning. So I'm working 4 mornings a week, which is fantastic. But like they know that I'm not, they see me work. They hear that I'm working. And I don't know that I really made that very obvious to them before. And not that that's bad that they didn't know before, but it's kind of given me more value in my work. And then it helps me, like going to work and coming home from work, I can then go, okay, I'm all in or I'm all out. You know, like I'm all in and working when I'm working. And then I'm all in on parenting and being a mom when I'm home. And so I think having a place to like even go, like even leaving the house was really helpful. And again, that's not everybody's life. That was not my life for the first 5-7 years of working, you know, like maybe even more than that. So it's not that it's a better than, a worse than, anything like that, but the stage of my life, the way that I can sort of reconcile the difficulty of like doing a full-time job and part-time hours and still figuring out now, like, when am I grocery shopping? Like, I have to rethink now, just in these last couple of months as my work rhythm has changed, when am I going to grocery shop? When am I going to clean my house? Like, it's all changed. everything has changed. But balancing those two things of, you know, parenting or just home life, maybe it's not even kids. Maybe it's just like being a person at home and being a person at work. I think that seeing value in both and maybe having a clear cut in both has really helped me, see the value in both. Like naming the value in both helps me live the value in both.
Yeah, that is really interesting and also really encouraging as Ashley and I's kids are both getting older and starting to kind of figure out like, oh, mom's not just like playing games over there on her computer. She's actually like contributing to our household income or whatever it happens mm-hmm. to be.
And I even say sometimes to them, like, I know this is really weird, you guys. Like, I'm talking to Instagram, but this is my job. You know, like, yes. We kind of name that it's like, there are certain jobs that have, like, boundaries that make sense mm-hmm. as far as work goes. And then things like being a writer, being a content creator, like, even when people are like, what do you do? And I say, I'm a podcaster. I still feel like, you know, like, I'm all twisty. Yeah. Like, I'm a what does that even mean?
Is this even real? Like, I'm not contributing to society.
Exactly. It's so strange. So I do often say to them, I'm like, I know, my job's weird, right? And they're like, a little bit, but have fun. You know, like, they'll literally, he's like, mom, are you going to go talk on Instagram? And I'm like, yeah, I am. I'll see you in half an hour. Like, it's just so weird. But, you know, another thing, too, about, like, kind of the hope of sort of, like, when your stage of life might not match up with your desired rhythm of life. Mm-hmm. I think that one thing that is so incredibly helpful is just to remember that seasons are seasons. And I don't mean that in a like diminishing, patronizing way of like, well, it's just a season and you'll get through it. Like, I don't mean it like that. I mean that we all go through seasons of life and work that are really, really difficult. But it's sort of like the information thing about how it's all information. See, all seasons like have something to teach us. And at the same time, we could also recognize that like if I'm working really hard on a project, if I'm gone for a lot of days, or if like if you guys, you know, are, let's say you're recording, you know, 8 podcast episodes over 3 days, you know, you're just like batching it like masters, that you sort of give yourselves rest. I had to do this to myself all the time. It's like, okay, so we had a season of work. Now we're going to have a little season of rest. And a season might be like a literal day or two, you know, like just to see that the rhythm of your work can, it doesn't have to be systemized week to week. It doesn't have to be the same all the time, that you can embrace like, oh, okay, well I had a kid homesick and I didn't get anything done for 3 days. It goes back to that, like, don't resent the sick kid, but just to see like, all right, well, I need to find more time over the next 2 days. And because this work is important, I'm not going to apologize for that, but I'm also, you know, I'm not going to resent it either way. I'm not going to resent the sick kid. I'm not going to resent the fact that, well, I can't make this work other ways. So much of it is, gosh, I hate it when people say like, you just change your perspective. I hate that. I hate it. And I'm about to say it. So now I like hate myself for saying it. but there is such power in just naming the fact that like things are not always going to go the way that we hope they do. But that doesn't mean we give up and just assume they're never going to be like that in a week, in a year, in 5 years. You know, that we can just sort of see like today, this is what's happening today. This is what matters today. This is what I need today. My family needs today, whatever. And then take tomorrow in a different way. And that's that, bringing it back to like the original question of like the parenting project dance thing. That's why there's no answer. Mm-hmm. Because it's life. Like, it's just, you can't systemize it. You just can't. And so, Yeah, it's not easy, but it's also really beautiful when you give yourself permission to just like know that there's not a right or a wrong way. It's just life.
Yeah. I really like what you said about almost looking at the seasons miniaturized, like the, you know, if you work really hard for 1 week, then maybe take a couple of days off, or like breaking them down into those smaller chunks, because otherwise you sit here. I personally would be sitting here going, oh my gosh, the season of little kids is going to extend for at least like 8 years because I have three kids and they're this far spaced apart and whatever. And, you know, 8 years is like, you could just drown in hopelessness at that point. Like, I'm never going to get to work or I'm never going to get to do anything ever again. But if you break it down, which is so much more realistic because you do find those little rhythms. And so then if you break it down into like week by week or even day by day, that just makes it so much easier to like, there's time for me and there's time for them. And it's not always going to go perfectly, but I don't have to be mad about it. It's okay.
Right.
Yeah.
And I don't think anybody that we see, you know, like on the internet or even in real life, I don't think anybody that we see that seems to really be anchored and settled in their rhythm of like working and parenting and being just a person. I don't think any of those people are that way because they have a really killer 5-year plan. You know, like those are people who are rooted in today and they may be thinking ahead a little bit and they have like goals or they have dreams or whatever it is, but ultimately, you know, the satisfaction in today does not come from planning for a year from now. It comes in being satisfied with today and being where you are today. And so it feels like we're searching sometimes. I know I do this, like just searching for like an answer that just literally doesn't exist, you know? Mm-hmm. And the sooner that we sort of accept that, I'm telling myself that, the sooner I'm like, hey, Kendra, there's no set rhythm. There's no set system that you can put on your family and your work that's going to work the same every day the way that you need it to. So just be here today and do what makes sense today.
Yeah, that is really important to recognize. And I like that just a couple of minutes ago, you said something about like do what works in the season for your whole family. And I think that is something as the moms and the wives, we aren't as good at recognizing that we ourselves are part of that family and we need to do what works for us too. And that can be really hard to kind of make a distinction about and then also take action on. And so if it is that you've been home with sick kids for 3 days and now you need to work, like maybe what's best for your whole family to take some stress off you is your kids are going to watch TV this morning in order for you to be able to get your work done. And maybe that doesn't jive with your perfect vision of what your parenting looks like. I know it doesn't with mine, but while like I've been pregnant this time, like Arthur has watched a lot more television than ever before because mom just needs to sit down once in a while.
Yeah.
It's
so well said.
So I know at the time we're recording this, we're recording at the end of October in 2019, but this episode is not going to launch until spring of 2020, which is crazy to think that we're moving into 2020, guys. But you just recently completed edits on your first book, and it's supposed to release in August, you can correct me if I'm wrong, of next year.
You are correct. No, it's August of next year, 2020. Yeah.
So how did you kind of lazy genius, quote unquote, your writing process from book proposal kind of all the way to working with a publishing house on edits while you have three small children in various kinds of childcare, whether it's school or daycare or even on summer break because they were home with you all summer long?
Yeah, no, for real. You know, it's funny. I really thought that lazy geniusing the book writing process would look really tangible. You know, I was like, okay, I'm built for this. I am built for creating structure and systems around doing a project. This is where I can do this. And I found the opposite to be true, and it was heartbreaking. But it was one of the most valuable lessons I think I could have learned through this entire project is that being a lazy genius, it is not always about efficiency and systems. Sometimes it's just about like being a person and not hating things at the end of the day, you know, just being like, okay, I feel like myself right now, you know, like that was what I sort of found through this entire thing is that, the value of feeling like myself at the end of a hard project was more important than creating like an amazing structure around that project. Now, there were definitely things that we set up And, you know, like I would leave for like one Saturday a month when I was writing, because again, like I work better with really long stretches. And so, rather than just like, you know, the 3 to 4 hour preschool window or whatever. And so I would just have book writing days and I would just sort of mark them off. Like I would batch my work, you know, it's like, okay, we're going to work on the podcast for a whole week and see how far I can get, you know, and get a few episodes done and, write some stuff for the blog. And then the third and fourth weeks of the month would be dedicated to the book. And one of those weekends, I would either like be gone all day Saturday, or I would go for like the weekend. I would go for, you know, 24 or 48 hours and write. And we did that for like 5 months. That was kind of the rhythm. So my work was set up in such a way that I could sort of manufacture like a fake long runway where at least my 3 days of 3 hours were working on the book rather than jumping around. Mm-hmm. That was really helpful for the way my brain works. But really, y'all, it was like, I don't mean to sound, this sounds so dumb of like writing a book is really hard. But I had no idea how hard writing a book was going to be. Like, I knew it would be hard, and I never ever thought it would be resembling easy. But I do think that there is something unique about how I am wired and how I'm sure a lot of other people are as well, that like I, in the podcasting world, in the blogging world, in the Instagram world, like your content that you're creating, your projects that you're creating, and this might be the case for like people who also do like soft goods and like, you know, things that have a very clear end, you know, like this blanket is done, you know, like this scarf is done, like whatever, that it is really, really hard to sit in crappy work for such a long time, because that's just not the nature of creating content on the internet usually right now. Is you create something that is small enough that you can edit it in the moment as you're there or the next day and make it what you want it to be and then put it out there and you're done. And a book is just like laughs in your face when it comes to that. A book's like, yeah, good try. That's not how it works here. And so I was just really overwhelmed by how difficult that was, how much bad I had to write in order to find something good. There were so many times where I would like, you know, call a friend or tell my husband, or I would call my agent. Like there were a couple times where I called my agent and I was like, can we get out of this? Like, can we just, I know I signed a thing, but can we like unsign it? Like this is not working. It was really difficult in ways that I didn't anticipate. I did not anticipate it would be, that it would sort of impact my... It didn't impact my identity, but it impacted my personhood, like how I felt at the end of the day. It was a struggle to still believe that like, no, you're doing good work, or you're capable of doing this. Or I felt like I was constantly pep talking myself. And that's not a usual brain space that I'm in. And so, yeah, it was not easy, but I think that one of the things that was the most profound about it, like I said, was realizing that feeling like myself at the end of a hard project is more important than the project's success. That makes the project successful to me in so many ways. And then also I have never had more practice at letting people in to my work in its most vulnerable state. And I don't mean just like my editor or whatever. I just mean like friends, like when they would say like, how's the book going? And I'm like, real bad. Like it's real bad, or I would cry about it or whatever. Like I, you know, that's just not the nature of my work either, because it is so like the beginnings and endings are so close together. And that was a beautiful practice to let people into that. It was one of the most like impactful things of the whole project. So I think it did lazy genius it in the sense that like I became a genius about, well, having to manage the time in an appropriate way for how I operate. But also what matters is who I am and who I interact with. And those things were really illuminated in ways that I hadn't experienced before. through writing the book.
Yeah. And that does sound like a pretty lazy genius realization to me, because you always, in your podcast, regular listeners to that will know that you always sort of come back to what matters to you and what needs to happen in your life and for your season. And it sounds like you did a really good job of that with, you know, batching things and coming up with a writing structure that worked for you. And then even when things got hard, like, I feel like you do a really great job at building in rest and building in time for you to just sit and be and do whatever you need to do to feel like yourself, which is something that is kind of a lost skill in our current culture, I think. And so I think it sounds like you did a great job of lazy geniusing your writing process, to be honest.
Thanks, Ashley.
Yeah, and definitely for someone who calls themselves a recovering perfectionist, I imagine that process was hard, because what you create first for a book is definitely not perfect. And the end product either, but it's at least a little bit closer.
It's closer. But dude, I mean, just the garbage, the absolute hot piles of so much garbage in the beginning. I mean, I think that it is such a, it's such a learning that anyone listening who has any sort of, like, wherever their creativity lies, anybody listening, wherever their creativity lies, failing and, like, just putting junk out there, I hate that. I always, whenever people would say, like, you just have to fail, you just have to try and fail, and that makes you, like, more creative, I always thought they were lying. I'm like, well, I don't have to do it that way. Like, I'm the one who can get around failing. I'm the one who can get around it and find a way to not have hot piles of garbage. But these are things that I never would have learned otherwise. And so I wouldn't say it's like, it's definitely not easy and it's annoying, but it's so worth it. It's just, it's such a gift. So I hope that this is just an encouragement to anyone who feels like they want to quit or shy away. Not just because things are getting hard, but because it doesn't make sense even. You know, like, sometimes our work is like, wait, why does this feel so difficult? Not like, why is the work itself hard, but why is even getting up the nerve to do it? Why is talking about it? Why is processing it? Why is sharing it in whatever stage? Like, why does this feel so hard? And I think it's because we have expectations, like you said, of, like, that things are supposed to be at a certain level by a certain time. And if they're not, you're not doing it right. And it's just not true. You learn so much in that murky middle.
Yeah. And one of the things that you said there is that sharing the work can be so hard, which is, you know, that balancing act that everyone has to deal with if they're creating things for people in this day and age. You have to create things and you also have to promote those things on social media. And we know that you do that. Like you said, you told your kids part of your job is talking to Instagram.
Right.
I mean, you do a really, really great job of being present on social media and connected to people on social media without seeming like you're there all the time. And so I'm really curious to hear how social media fits into your creative process and how you have built up those healthy boundaries around it.
Yeah, that's such a great question. There are a couple things. One is, I think that it becomes a lot easier to find kind of that social media rhythm and structure when you believe that what you're sharing can help people. Because I think a lot of the hangups in, like, how much to share or when to share, feeling the pressure to, like, be on a lot or whatever, and then feeling weird about it, you know, like, no one cares, you know, like, it can get really squirrely, is I have to believe, and I do now, I do believe that, like, the space that I take up on the internet is an important space because it's helping people. And as long as I remember that what I'm offering is giving value and encouragement and permission to people who want it and are so grateful to have it, and it's legitimately affecting their lives in positive ways, then it's kind of like, well, why would I not get on there? You know, like, why would I not try to offer these things? Because I'm not the only person who's offering solutions to different problems or encouragement or hope. But we all have voices in our real lives and on the internet that just feel like they're speaking specifically to us. You know, it just feels like, I'm not going to listen to anyone else. I'm going to listen to this person because they seem to get it and they get me and I trust them. And so knowing that I can fill that space for some people is a truly like humbling thing. And I mean that with like the greatest sincerity. And so I take that really seriously. You know, like if someone is going to trust me enough to that I'm their first stop in finding a solution to a problem, I want to take great care in offering those solutions because I don't want to waste their time. I don't want to waste their trust. And I believe that what I can offer can help. So I feel like that is a huge, like, that makes the, I was trying to come up with a car analogy and I don't know enough about cars to accurately do that, but it's sort of like I drove when I was in high school, I drove like this old van that was brown and it was gross and it didn't have shocks on it. So that's not super great. Like, I feel like I don't know how it all works, but like when you're driving without shocks, it's very, very bumpy. So it's kind of like the difference in believing that you're allowed to take up space on the internet with your, or wherever you are with your creative work, when you believe that the space that you're taking up is valuable to people and you want to share it for the sake of those people, not so much for your own, for yourself. It's kind of like the difference in driving with shocks and without. Like it just sort of, you're going the same direction. It's just a little smoother, you know, it's just, it feels like there's less friction there. So that's kind of that was like a big thing, but specifically, I tell you what, having like a thematic editorial calendar for social media is so helpful to me. And I think like maybe a way to, it's helpful for me to think about like choosing like the immovable things, like the big rocks or whatever. And so I feel like that phrase is used often, like the big rocks. So I have every Monday, I do meal plan Monday. I don't know when it started. It wasn't on purpose where I'm like, every Monday I'm going to talk about a meal plan. I think I just did it one day and they both had the sound M and it was like, well, okay, it's a Monday. This makes sense. And now it's like a thing, like every Monday is meal plan Monday. And so on Instagram stories, and that's the thing too, they can get complicated too, you guys, right? Is there's the feed and then there's the stories and what do you put in what? And it can get kind of confusing and all the things. So so I know that one of my big rocks is meal plan Monday in stories. And then I'm also live every Thursday on Instagram, and which shows up technically in stories. And so it's like, okay, well, I have significant story exposure on Mondays and Thursdays, right? So maybe then somewhere, definitely on a like Tuesday or Wednesday, let's put something in the feed. Now I'm not, because I'm not a maker in the sense like, you know, if you are a weaver or, you know, you're like a creative maker of something tangible, showing your product is how you make money. You know, mm-hmm. like that's, it's, you need to probably post more often and you feel the need to do that. Whereas mine is less so because I have content other places. And so it just kind of, I realize that there's some freedom for me in that choice. But my order of things is those big rocks. Then I have a podcast that comes out every Monday, a new episode every Monday. Well, Meal Plan Monday is already taking up Monday. So I'm like, well, Tuesday on stories, I'll just do like a quick audio blip of the podcast episode. And so that's still offering value to people who might not subscribe or might be new Instagram followers and don't know how to have a podcast. But guess what? I don't have to like turn on my camera in my house on a Tuesday. I can be with my family, but still be on the internet mm-hmm. because it's planned that way. So that's really helpful. And so really every week, those three things are always set. And then I just sort of decide, like on a, you know, the Friday before usually, like what's happening in the world, what's happening with my family, holidays, what am I maybe promoting? I'm an affiliate for a couple of things. I sell some of my own products. Like, and then I just sort of fill in the holes. But those three things are always there. And then that just kind of helps me know, like, where there's space for me to add other things. And I think too, like the earlier when we were talking about like those mini seasons and sort of like, if you're really busy, you know, then take some time off. It's sort of the same concept of like, I don't like for my face to be on stories every single day. You know, I like for there to be just a rhythm to that, where sometimes it's like just text, then it's my face. And then, or maybe it's just not always my family. Maybe sometimes it's like in the feed, it can be a picture of that's text rather than an actual photo and all those kinds of things. So it just sort of helps if you have things that are already set, anchors during the week, and then you just sort of have like built in, like almost little rules for yourself of like, maybe it's like, I don't want to post on Fridays. I just don't want to even think about it. Okay, great. Friday is off limits, but you want to have something that is in your feed 3 times a week. So now you're going to pick 3 days that are available that maybe aren't taken up by stories, so that you're not just constantly on Instagram every day, just trying to fill in the space, as it's there. Cause it feels urgent. You know, if you open up Instagram and you're like, I haven't posted in 2 days and you're frantic about it. Whereas you're like, no, I know that. I planned that I didn't post in 2 days, and I have a post ready to go tomorrow and everything's fine. Everybody calm down on the inside of your head, you know? So, I talk to myself a lot on the inside of my head, if you haven't figured that out. So that's how I do it. That's not how it works for everybody. But it's really, really helped me feel like I'm present and I'm active. I'm caring for the audience, but I'm also not at the mercy of Instagram all the time.
That's really smart. Really, really smart. Because I think there is this pressure to hop on every day and have something like witty or meaningful or heartfelt to say. And I mean, not every day is a witty day on my end. I can tell you that much. So it's good to know, like, have those guideposts or those anchors, like you said, for yourself. And then you don't have to worry about any of the rest of the days.
No, you really don't. And also to remember that you are not, if anybody listening feels like, oh my gosh, it takes me an hour to edit the photo and write the caption and all the things. And I'm like, yeah, it does. That's how long it takes. Like no post, no story, none of it is effortless. Mm. Like it looks effortless because people put great effort into it. And so I remember sitting, I was at like a writing conference or something, and I was working on something for Instagram, and I was taking a long time because it takes a long time. Like you're writing words that you hope, you know, that are fitting in like 3 lines on Instagram, all the things. And someone was like, wow, it takes you this long. And I'm like, every single time. That's why it is an important part of your job to work into your rhythm. Instagram, social media, it can't just be like when you have extra time or when, like you said, Abby, when something like just witty comes to mind. That's just not how it works. Witty things are very well crafted. They're very highly crafted from behind the scenes. You know? And so just wanting to give people, again, just give people permission to be like, you're not doing it wrong if it takes you a long time. I think, in fact, you're doing it right if it takes you a long time. So just take a long time on the most important pieces of your social media kind of like strategy, so that you're not just feeling like, you know, you're in a hamster wheel, that there's actually some movement because you're choosing the movement.
Yes. Oh my gosh. That is such amazing advice. And so now that we have heard so many wonderful tidbits from you about how to lazy genius everything in the best way possible, we always do a little mini book club at the end of every episode where we talk about what we've been reading lately or something that you've really loved, anything like that. And I know that we're both really looking forward to hearing from you because you have great taste in books.
Oh, that's so nice. Y'all have been in such a book rut. It's been the worst since like July. Ugh,
those are
like, how many months is that? It's like 4 months where I am just, it's like pulling teeth. I have quit so many books, ones that I thought, like, I bought with dollars. Mm-hmm. I'm like, no, this is not, I don't know, this is
That's
not working.
The worst.
It is. It's so frustrating. So maybe you guys can give me some ideas too. I was recently recommended, someone told me, who knows my taste very well, said that A Discovery of Witches is going to get me out of my book rut. Have y'all read that series, A Discovery of Witches?
I have not even heard of it.
No.
Okay, I hadn't either. And it's like, it's someone who knows that I love Red Rising and, you know, that I like these sort of, not always dystopian, but just like other world. I love world building, creative world building. Mm-hmm. And they said this was the series that was going to be my saving grace. And so I'm just saying, like, you can check back in with me when you're promoting this episode in however many months. And you're like, so did you read A Discovery of Witches and was it good? We'll see. Because that was recent. But I did recently reread. I'm never a rereader. But fiction-wise, have you guys read The Ocean at the End of the Lane by Neil Gaiman?
I have. It's been several years, though. I just remember it being, like, really magical and otherworldly and also really short and manageable.
It was very short. It's like such a tiny, sweet little, like if you're one of those people that sits down on a couch with a blanket in front of a fire at 7, like you'll be done and, you know, like by 10. Mm-hmm. And I recently reread that and I'm finding that that's one of my favorite books. I just adore that book. And so that was kind of like a fun little quick book win from being in the rut. But I am about 2/3 of the way through In the Woods, which is the first Tana French book.
Okay. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit of a mystery thriller.
I like mysteries. I like a good British, suspenseful thriller. And I've read another book of hers called The Likeness, which I loved. And it takes place with like a lot of the same characters, but not chronological. Like you don't have to read them chronologically, but I like, if there's a chronology, I'm going to follow it.
Same.
And so when I realized that I was not reading the first one, I was like, I'm sorry, we got to go back to the beginning. I need to know what happened from the beginning. So I'm reading that first book. I really am enjoying that. It's just really, it's really big. It's like just taking me a long. It's like, I don't know, 400 pages. It's tiny type, all the things. So so that's In the Woods. I'm reading that and really liking that. But I am very hopeful about A Discovery of Witches.
Oh, I'll have to look into both of those. I'm currently reading Still Life by Louise Penny, which is the first of her Inspector Gamache mystery series. I thought October would be a fun month to read a mystery, even though that's not usually my genre. And I have heard Louise Penny and Tana French kind of, not necessarily compared, but people are always like, oh, if you like this, you'll like that, you know? And I am liking Still Life so far. I'm almost done with it. And it's mystery is still not my favorite genre, but I think it'll be kind of a fun series to dive into here and there just to mix things up.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I've never read anything by her, but I've heard the same thing. I feel like people say, don't quote me on this, I feel like people say that Tana French is like just a hair grittier.
I think
like if you like Louise Penny but you don't mind like a little more like around the edges, then you should go for it. That's on the back of a book, her book cover, by that's in her bio, like a little around the edges. But yeah, like I feel like she's just, there's just like, it's a little darker. It's not as cozy.
Gotcha.
Is not quite as cozy.
And I would definitely describe Louise Penny as cozy. There's nothing grisly in the Louise Penny mystery books. Mystery is not where I usually turn either. I'm in the same boat as Ashley. But I did read the first Louise Penny this summer and really enjoyed it. It's a little more, I would say, like literary mystery, which is much more my wheelhouse. So we're actually going to Quebec in a couple of weeks. And so I picked up the next couple of Louise Penny books to read between now and then, because that's where they are set. So that is really exciting. I have been in a cycle of nonfiction lately, which is actually unusual for me. I am a fiction reader, hardcore. But all of my library holds came in at once, as you guys both know that issue.
As they do.
So I've been like deep diving into some nonfiction, which has all actually kind of worked out together. So the first book I read was Burnout, which is A Secret to Unlocking the Stress Cycle.
That book is so good.
Yeah. I actually found the book after hearing so many people rave about it. I found the content really, really good, but like the writing style did not quite jive with me.
It's very girlfriend, isn't it?
It is. And yeah, that it is. I couldn't dig that. But the information is worth slogging through the couple hundred pages you have to. It's actually not that long. It's like maybe 230 pages.
And if you skip the stories, you know, like a lot of times there are a lot of stories that are, yeah, they're just like reinforcing points. Mm-hmm. And so if you're just going,
like
actually, if I remember, I think at the end of every chapter is like a recap of just like the sort of science. And so you could just like read those. Mm-hmm.
It's just TLDR. Like it's literally called TL semicolon DR. Too long, that's didn't read. Right. Here's the bullet point. So I took photos of all of those end summaries before I return it to the library so that I can go back and like jog my memory. Read that, and then I immediately hopped into Deep Work, Rules for Focused Success in a Distract World by Cal Newport, and finished that really quickly, and then immediately jumped into Digital Minimalism, also by Cal Newport. So I feel like I am unlocking my stress cycle, learning how to work in a focused way, and getting rid of my addiction to technology, like all in one weekend. Ask me how that goes.
Funny. I was going to say. That's funny.
An ambitious overhaul, but...
Well, thank you so much for chatting with us today, Kendra. So before you go, why don't you tell our listeners where they can find you online and where they can learn more about your soon-to-be-published book?
That is such a weird sentence. I mean, you guys, what on earth? So I am almost always on Instagram exclusively. I have a Facebook. I don't ever go there. But I'm on Instagram at The Lazy Genius. And the podcast, the blog, like all the other content is at thelazygeniuscollective.com. And that's where people can sign up for my mailing list, where I actually send like book reviews and podcast episode recommendations and lots of different things. So it's all either on that website, lazygeniuscollective.com, or at The Lazy Genius on Instagram.
Awesome. And we will link to all of that in the show notes, including your Lazy Letter, which is your email newsletter. It only comes out once a month. It's totally worth signing up for. So we'll link to all that good stuff in the show notes. And thank you again, Kendra. We'll talk to you later.
Sounds great. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Chasing Creative podcast. If you like what you heard in this episode, be sure to stop by chasingcreative.com to check out the show notes, catch up on past episodes, and subscribe to the podcast.
If you enjoyed this episode, we'd love it if you'd leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. You can also join in the creative conversation by finding us on Instagram at Abigail E. Krebs or at Ashley Brooks Writes, or by using the hashtag ChasingCreative on Twitter or Instagram.
If you have any feedback for us, drop us a line at chasingcreativepodcast@gmail.com.
Thanks for listening. Until next time, go chase what makes you creative.